जय बाद माधवा कुंज बिहारी,
जय
जय
राधा
राधा
माधव कुंज बिहारी।
गोपी जन बाला गिरिवारदारी,
गोपी
गोपी
जन बाल गिरन
यशोद नंदन ब्रज जनरंजना,
यशोदनंदन ब्रज जनरंजना।
जमुना चीरवनचारी,
सुन चीरवनचारी।
जय राधा माधव कुंजा बिहारी,
जय राजा माधव कुंज बिहारी।
शिवाय माधव आस साखी की जाय, स्वपार की जाय, चितंग चंद्राय मंदिर की जाय, नारायणम नमस्कृत्यम।
नमस्कृत्यम्
नारं चैव नरोत्तमम्,
नरोत्तमम्
देवं सरस्वतीं व्यासम्,
देवं सरस्वतीं व्यासम्
ततो जयमुदीरयेत्।
ततो जयम्
ॐ
उदीरयेत्।
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ 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 नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
श्रीमद् भागवतम 4.1 10 5 Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka. Peace, peace. Nadya Samudra
समुद्रागिरया
Savanaspati Virudha.
सवनस्पतिविरुदः।
फलन्ति औषधया सर्वा,
फलन्त्यो सदया सर्वा।
कामम्
आमन्त्रं तस्य वाय।
बोलिए।
नद्या समुद्रा गिरया।
नाद्या समुद्र गिराया,
सवनस्पति विरुदः।
सावनास्पति विरुद्धः,
फलन्त्यो सदयः सर्वा।
फलन्त्यो सदयः सर्वा।
कामम् अन्वृत्तु तस्य वाय।
काममान्वृत्तस्य
नद्यसमुद्रगिराया। नद्या समुद्रागिरया। सर्वनस्पतिविरुदः। सर्वनस्पतिविरुदः। फलन्त्योषधयः सर्वा। फलन्त्यो सदयः सर्वा। आमनन्वृत्तस्य वाय। आमनन्वृत्तस्य वाय।
नद्यसमुद्रगिरया।
नद्यसमुद्रागिरया।
स्वनपस्वनपस्थिविरुदः।
Svanasti virbhudaha.
Palantya shodataya sarva.
Palantya shodaya sarva.
Kamam anvrityus tasya vai.
Kamam anvrityus tasya vai.
Nadaya samudra giraya.
Nadya samudra giraya.
Savanaspati virudaya.
Savanaspati virudaha.
Palantyokshatya sarvaha.
Palantyokshatya sarva.
Kamam
anvrityutasya vai.
Nadyaha.
Nadyaha.
Okay. Maybe before we do this, just look, if you have it in front of you, look at the words there. And how many words do you recognize? I recognize Nadya, river. Samudra, ocean. Giri, hill. Savanaspati, I don't recognize. Viruda, maybe means interrupted. Palanti looks like fruit. An ocean that looks like herbs. Sarva, all, kamam, desire. And tasya vai, or some kind of like qualifiers. So one quote from Prabhupada, I wrote my books in such a way that I thought that anybody who read them carefully would learn Sanskrit.
Huh.
And so I think if we just kind of take the time to just be, not just do it as a mechanical thing, but actually to kind of note the translations and stuff, and you start to pick up a vocabulary. And there's a really good little book, was published by a devotee from Vrindavan, about 20 pages. It was a summary of Sanskrit grammar. It was so nice. It gave you a little orientation. And with that, you could begin to recognize some of the things. And it really enriches, you know, your meditation, your contemplation of that. Nadya.
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 Rivers.
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 Samudraha.
Samudraha.
Oceans.
Oceans.
Girayaha.
Giriyaha.
Hills.
Hills.
And hills. Mountains.
And mountains.
Savanaspati.
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 Vegetables.
Vegetables.
Virudaha.
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 Creepers.
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 Pala. Pala. Palanti.
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 Okay, it's not fruit. Active.
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 Oshadayaha.
Oshadayaha.
Drugs.
Drugs.
Sarvaha.
Sarvaha.
All.
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 Kamam.
Kamam.
Necessities.
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 And of course, Mother Urmila was pointing out yesterday, this word appeared twice in the previous one. Now it's appearing in this verse also. Anvritu.
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 Seasonal.
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 Tasya.
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 For the king.
For the king.
For the king.
Vai.
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 Certainly.
Certainly. No, Maharaj, if you could just pause for one moment. Okay, I'm going to ask everybody at this time, especially those that are on Skype, if you're on the phone or whatever, if everybody could please mute at this time so that Hanuman Prasad Swami will be able to give his presentation without any background noise. So, Amara, just give me 1 second here. It'll take literally like 2 seconds. I'll set this up.
Muted. Unmuted.
Okay, go ahead, Maharaj. Thank you.
Translation. The rivers, oceans, hills, mountains, forests, creepers, and active drugs in every season paid their tax quota to the king in profusion. Die. What would you die? So this is a very nice section. Basically, the sages of the Naimisharanya, they want the proper sacrifice and religious activity and understand this material world, Krishna's incarnations in this world, the spiritual world, how to go there. And they ask Siddha Goswami, and Siddha Goswami answers their questions. And he says the real solution is Srimad Bhagavatam, our very means of conquest. But then they ask, well, wait a second, Vyasadeva already wrote so many books, so why is Srimad Bhagavatam special? Why did Sukadeva Goswami study it? Yeah. And so then he tells the story of Vyasadeva, meeting Narada Muni and getting the impetus. And then it describes very important verses how Narada Vyasadeva sat down in an ashram, and they have an ashram, and he can meditate, and he saw reality, Krishna and Krishna's energies. It's not all one. And energies under Krishna's control, not independent or competing. Suffering because of the incompatible mixture of certain energies. And then the solution, Srimad Bhagavatam. Pastime, devotional service, which means hearing. And so he compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, so we have so many things to hear about. And then he taught it to, engaged in Sankirtan. He had taught it to his son, Sukadeva Goswami, so he could distribute it. And who's Sukadeva Goswami, like that. And then who's the audience? Who's asking the questions? Maharaj Pariksit. So there's the whole story of Maharaj Pariksit's birth and the whole ambience behind that. Son of Drona punished. Then it'd be the chapter on the birth of Maharaj Pariksit. But before that, it kind of deviates a little bit to Krishna leaving for Dwarka, Krishna arriving in Dwarka. And I think also the maybe disappearance of Dhritarashtra before or after. But the whole first canto is a preface to this conversation between Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit. So here, Yudhishthira Maharaj has been pacified by the instructions of Bhishma Dev because he was so upset after all this happened. So many people killed and slaughtered, and so many people in remorse and separation. And so then Bhishma Dev ensured him that, no, this was the best thing. It was all proper. It was all being carried on by, Krishna's arrangement. You were guided by God, the Brahmanas, and Vedic scriptures. Yeah. So having been pacified, it describes that he then took up his job, organizing the material world like that. Yeah. And now it's describing the situation. And, it's a few verses, maybe about 5-6 verses here. Then it will actually describe Krishna's departure like that. So everything is full of etiquette and civil respect and nice regulation, organization, so we can live very nice lives. And it's describing here, to me it's very interesting and striking because it says they paid their tax quota. And, of course, maybe we have some consciousness like this. But if you go out, my goodness, everybody's consciousness is just that everything is made of matter, and that, trees are machines, animals are machines or whatever. It was interesting. Some time ago, I was using my Microsoft Word processor there, and I wrote, the cow, did this or something, And the robot informed me, I said, no, the cow, it did this, like that. It's very interesting because the cow is not a person. You see, the cow is a thing. So it's so interesting. Suddenly embedded in the robots everywhere. Impersonalism. But generally speaking, as far as I understand, from people like Noam Chomsky and Prabhupada's comments, that this is not the way the mass of humanity thinks and feels. It's just because the leaders are artificially keeping them in a certain kind of mindset and to exploit them. And we'll see in the purport, Prabhupada talks about that. But here, even the hills are people. Prabhupada, of course, closely was pointing out that some hills are alive and the oceans are different personified people. in the mountains. It's just like my hand. You may think it's made of dead matter. Well, yeah, but there's a person intimately connected with it, like that. And so if you, my hand can give you its charity, you know. But that represents the people behind that. There's so much sacrifice and perspective on a high class level by the human beings, because you know the human, what do you call it, human loka, what's that called, Burbuva, Marcha loka, yeah, the bhumi. The human level is a really critical place, knowing the structure of the universe, because here you can do sacrifice. And by that sacrifice, and everybody else gets their satisfaction, they can do their subtle jobs. So when there's a king like Yudhisthira, then all the sacrifice is going on, the brahmanas are properly situated, and the demigods and everything else, rivers, oceans, they all become, get great satisfaction. And so therefore they're very happy to contribute to him, you know, for his good government. So public purport. Since Maharaj Yudhisthira was under the protection of Ajit, the infallible Lord, as mentioned above, the properties of the Lord, namely the rivers, oceans, hills, forests, etc., were all pleased, and they used to supply their respective quota of taxes to the king. The secret to success is, italic, to take refuge under the protection of the Supreme Lord. End quote. Yeah. So before any endeavor, you know, many different religions mention this, just pray to God this will be a success, and it will be. Just take the time to stop before, every now and again, before you, the different partitions in your day, doing this, doing that, you know, maybe set up some partitions in your day, and just chant a little bit, pray to Krishna, and take shelter under the Lord. In italic, without his sanction, nothing can be possible. To make economic development by our own endeavors on the strength of tools and machineries is not all. The sanction of the Supreme Lord must be there. The sanction of the Supreme Lord must be there. Otherwise, despite all instrumental arrangements, everything will be unsuccessful. The ultimate cause of success is the Daiva, the Supreme. Kings like Maharaj Yudhisthira knew perfectly well that the king is the agent of the Supreme Lord to look after the welfare of the mass of people. Of course, the deity for the mass of people is Ganapati. Gana means people. Ganesh, controller of the people. Interesting. King dealing more with the mode of passion. Yeah. So the king is the agent of the Supreme Lord to look after the welfare of the mass of people. Actually, the state belongs to the Supreme Lord. The rivers, oceans, forests, hills, drugs, etc. are not creations of man. They are all creations of the Supreme Lord. And living being is allowed to make use of the property of the Lord for the service of the Lord. Today's slogan is that everything is for the people, and therefore the government is for the people and by the people. Wow, it's interesting. That this question, you know, Abraham Lincoln in his Gettysburg Address finishes off that this government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. It's kind of interesting that it reached India, because Prabhupada wrote this purport before he left India. So that phrase actually reached India even. But to produce a new species of humanity at the present moment on the basis of God consciousness and perfection of human life, the ideology of godly communism, the world has to again follow in the footsteps of kings like Maharaj Yudhisthira or Parikshit. So, you know, here Prabhupada is mentioning the ideology of communism, but in several cases, for example, when the United States of America was being created, it was a big experiment in political philosophy, and because there's going to be no king. As you know, it wasn't just like one small experiment, it was a whole huge landmass and everything else, with no king, you know. And some people were afraid. So they made their whole decision about how to structure it, and a lot of philosophical ideas going in at the beginning. And I think it was Thomas Jefferson, when the whole thing was kind of set up, and the Constitution, different houses, and he said, but this is only going to work if the citizens are brave and honest, like that. So they recognize the necessity of individual character and the people who are running the system. One of our friends, Dr. Bandhapajaya, he's head of the Department of Ancient History at Calcutta University. And we're talking a little bit about this, and he said, you know, you can adjust the system depending on the people. You know, when you have a lot of, like, simple people, they need, like, a very directive government. When you have a lot of intelligent people, they need a more anarchistic government, you know? He said, but basically, it comes down to the quality and character of the people involved like that, that it's going to work. You know? So in communism, too, the idea is that the proletariat, the shudras, are the ultimate authority. But even there, Marx includes the idea that the whole system has to involve education of the proletariat. They have to be educated. You know? So Prabhupada's saying here, yes, this is all very good, but the education is only going to come through the devotional service. And it has to be intuitive, it has to be, you know, profound, yeah, and experienced. And then people can take up these different things of being, probably wasn't opposed to democracy, you see, sometimes, but if the people are like that, they have some good quality and character, then of course naturally they'll support, you know, some kind of autocrat. The world has to again following the footsteps of kings like Maharaj Yudhisthira or Maharaj Pariksit to establish the ideology of godly communism. There is enough of everything by the will of the Lord. Yeah. And we can make proper use of things to live comfortably without enmity between men or animals and man or nature. Between men or animal and man or nature. So these verses are really nice, you know, to use for preaching in ecology, make up small booklets, this one, and the verse in Queen Kunti's prayers where she describes how everything is going on very nicely. Yeah? Very nicely, about a few verses like that, make small booklets, and so many opportunities in the area of ecology now, agriculture, and to introduce our ideas like that. Yeah? And Prabhupada is very broad. In the very beginning, of course, the preface of the Bhagavatam, he also makes this point. And not just between men, but also between men and animals and everything else like that. There is enough of everything by the will of the Lord, and we can make proper use of things to live comfortably without enmity between men or animal and man or nature. The control of everything, the control of the Lord is everywhere. And if the Lord is pleased, every part of nature will be pleased. The river will flow profusely to fertilize the land. Oceans will supply sufficient quantities of minerals, pearls, and jewels. The forest will supply sufficient wood, drugs, and vegetables. And the seasonal changes will effectively help produce fruits and flowers in profusion. So we spend like a fair amount of time in South America, and still right in downtown big cities like Santiago in Chile or Buenos Aires, you see horse-driven carts going around doing things. You see farmers using horses to plow their land. You see open marketplaces with big bags of things stacked side by side. And you just dip into the weight thing. And some people selling like forest herbs, very potent, you know, strong herbs like that, different kinds available for medicine, spicing, you know? And very simple, very practical. We did one program down there with San Marcos University, and part of it was on economics. And one professor from the university was, you know, part of our panelist thing. And he was saying he was amazed because, you know, almost all theories on economics are based on the idea that there's not enough. And he said, but your idea is om purnama daha purnaminam, that is sufficient. And he was kind of amazed. He kept kind of repeating it again and again like that, you know. And yeah, Yeah, because basically the basic principle of killing animals, Narhari was pointing this out, John McCartney's comment, that if you just take care of this one thing, then automatically there's going to be a tremendous increase in abundance. If you don't take care of it, if we start like raising animals and slaughtering them, then the whole system just doesn't work. So then Socrates in the Republic makes this, actually he's in the beginning in the Republic, when he's describing his government, Socrates suggests a vegetarian city. But his friend says most people won't be able to follow this. Then he suggests a city where people are allowed to eat meat, which he says will automatically cause strife, economic competition, everything else. And then he describes the whole system like that. So one comment by one philosopher is, it is the best kept secret in Western philosophy that Socrates' original city was vegetarian. Yeah. But that's so fundamental, even in the beginning of Ishavashtam Vidam Sarvam, the point that Prabhupada emphasizes there again is that the human quota is fruits, vegetables like that. Yeah. So very simple, and it creates sufficient. The artificial way of living depending on factories and tools can render so-called happiness only to a limited number at the cost of millions. Yeah. Since the energy of the mass of people is engaged in factory production, the natural products are being hampered. And for this, the mass is unhappy. Without being educated properly, the mass of people are following the footsteps of the vested interests by exploiting natural resources, and therefore there is acute competition between individual and individual and nation and nation. Yeah. So we were trying to work in this area of preaching and ecology and stuff for some time. So you went to kind of like a New Age bookstore in Canada and looked through, and you found a few nice used books. One was, I think it was The Green Revolution and the Future of World Agriculture by Hank Hovelink. Zed Books, and a few more, and just a few like that. We got some very nice citations, some good, interesting information, you know? And they can make some nice presentations, because the idea of all of this is to bring people to Bhagavad Dharma, you know, to Srila Prabhupada's books like that. So it seems like we need to go into these areas a little bit, maybe just for our own practical peace of mind and corporal, tranquility. But that's it. We're not going to looking for happiness in this world. Forget it. We're not looking for, extremely comfortable situation in the transit lounge. Transit lounge is not where you put your bed and buy a nice sheet and get a bed lamp and a reading library. No, you get a comfortable seat that'll make you sufficient for as long as it works. You take care. You go to the doctor enough to keep your body together, to hang in there for 25 more years. Okay. Yeah. So, for example, the Japanese, there's one phrase in one of these books that said that one Japanese phrase was all human beings have a right to the three sacred things: color television, refrigerator, and automobile. Of course you're joking. But that's the idea. We were coming today on the freeway from Shiva's Pandit's house to the temple here, and he goes to work and like that. And I was just doing the traditional thing, counting up the number of people in the cars. And it was so rare to find, two people in a car. Of course, a carpool lane is two people. Yeah. So this is the thing. We're just, we have to speak of America. It's impossible for the whole world to maintain this level of profligate princes enjoying way beyond our means like that. And of course then if the education is there, you don't need it. So the best the ordinary people are striving to follow the vested interests. And even the king and so on. The king when the good king and the king goes out and plows the land and does this everybody else, he's the king, okay, he's got a job to do. But he doesn't live like riotous life. He has to have some kind of nice dress and stuff so people know he's the king and some things like that. But he lives like a decent, sane life. You know? And so people follow. They say, okay, you know, the king's living like that. You know, if I want to have the risk of my head being chopped off at any minute or assassination, I can live like him. But forget it. You know, I'll live. I won't have the big throne and the big, you know, outfit. And, you know, but I'll be happy, maybe even happier than the king. You know, and so in the opposite of this society, especially here in San Francisco where we are, I used to take visiting devotees for a tour of San Francisco sometimes, or visiting like members. So we get on the BART train and you go down to Fisherman's Wharf at the end. There was a maritime museum, all these nice, you know, models of boats. Among bodies of water, I am the ocean. Among purifiers, I am the wind. So it had like a nice, you know, uplifting thing. And if you get off at the Embarcadero stop in the tunnel, there's all these incredible, you know, places of enjoyment. There's the, what's it called, the Hyatt Regency, right there. And it's like something out of Star Wars. It's like an 8-story or 9-story hotel. But inside, like the first 4 stories, is like a pyramid inside. So this hollow, like, you know, subterranean heavenly planet type place where people are looking out of their expensive hotel rooms, you know, stacked up above one above each other, going inwards down to the area down below, where there's different Tahiti restaurants and this and that. And it's just unbelievable enjoyment, but expensive. Then there's different like spiral escalators that just go up and down. One goes up to this big store where you can get, you know, $200 designer jeans with tailored holes. You can buy them with wear marks and tailored holes in your jeans like that. See, it's going to this spiral escalator and go all the way up and come all the way down. Look at the whole thing, you know, men's haberdashery. Ladies, fragrances, you know. It really, you can see how the thing is really artificial. But it's attractive externally if you're in a certain kind of consciousness. And so people that are educated about cultivation of the human spirit, that's when they're attracted. And then a few people at the top of the pyramid can enjoy these incredible pleasures, you know, Lear jets and Gucci briefcases or whatever it is, and Halliburton briefcases, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Since the energy of the mass is engaged in factory production, you know, it's at the cost of millions. And there's no control for the trained agent of the Lord. So vices have a hard time controlling their senses. Kshatriyas, you know, some possibility, and they can keep everybody else from becoming too crazy. And they have to take care of the Brahmins. So ISKCON has to produce Brahmins who have satisfaction, can control their senses, and then they can keep the kings, the administrators, from being carried away. And they're opulence. We must look into the defects of modern civilization by comparison here. And we should follow in the footsteps of Maharaj Yudhisthira to cleanse man and wipe out anachronisms. And I kind of probably uses the word anachronism several times like this. Of course, ana, I think, means opposed or against or out of, and chronism means time. So it would mean like, you know, trying to use a horse and buggy in on the freeway or something. It's an anachronism, you know. But I can't see how it's going. Actually, it's almost like what Prabhupada wants us to do is engage in developing anachronisms. He wants us to develop a civilization that was going on thousands of years ago in the modern world. So, some perspective I don't understand. And should follow in the footsteps of Maharaj Yudhisthira to cleanse man and wipe out anachronisms like that. He also comments that Kamsa was the greatest anachronism. He just means out of time and place like that, the way things should go on. So it's kind of what I was getting out of this purport. It's very, very nice. These two purports, very practical. You know, going through and editing Prabhupada's books and pulling things out, you can make up very nice essays. So many things to write. I write commentaries to your local paper, attend different conferences. We're trying to positively promote light of the Bhagavad. We have our Anjana Sutta Academy, www.jayarama.us, and it's very esoteric. And then exoteric, we have Bhati. It's like Bhakti with a K missing. Bhati.org, it means light. That's the webpage for our North American Institute for Oriental and Classical Studies based in Tennessee. And with those, we're trying to do, like, you know, preaching, get out and meet people. And we're trying to use Light of the Bhagavat as a preaching tool, organize symposiums, you know, workshops, art exhibitions, publish different print extracts. And we're having good success here and there in Mexico, Argentina, different places, U.S. You know. And I actually looked up, there's two purports that especially the bookmarks deal with this topic of today, the Light of the Bhagavat. And one is text number 9, a picturesque scene of green paddy fields enlivens the heart of the poor agriculturalist, but it brings gloom to the face of the capitalist who lives by exploiting the poor farmers. So the picture is just really intense, really like a whole little drama if you look at it. And the thing, we have the original files, like 20 or 30 megabytes. So you can blow it up to, like, you know, 6 feet. And then you see all these details, you know. And when it's in a gallery, it's really like, it slows you, it stops you, and you stop and look. And imagine, after looking a little bit, you read the translation. And Papa's purport is really wonderful about this thing about, you know, different aspects of society and agricultural development. It's very nice. In South America, we have some real strong communist universities and things like that, because Papa says that agriculture is the noblest profession, like that. You know? So, you know, using these purports, but this one, number 9, is not really nice, carrying on this idea even more like that. Light of the Bhagavat, number 9. And Light of the Bhagavat, number 28. The beautiful scenery after the rainy season was attractive to the eyes of everyone, including Sri Krishna, the cause of all causes. And so Prabhupada says in the purport, we should always appreciate the creative energy of the Supreme Lord. Beautiful nature, even though material and therefore temporary, is always full of the glories of the Creator. Yeah? There is a class of philosophers who condemn the material creation as false. They say Brahman is truth, but the creation is false. That is not good. The creation is also a relative truth. It is, in fact, the temporary picture of the eternal creation. A forgetful soul has no information of the spiritual creation, known as the Sanatan Dham, but the temporary creation gives an idea of its original creation. The devotee of the Lord therefore makes the best use of the bad bargain by utilizing the temporary creation in the service of the Lord. So I think that's the kind of final point, is the fundamental thing, is if we don't want to be happy, try to become happy in this world. We want to try exploiting everything, even the mode of goodness. But we want to become happy by practicing, you know, playing with the dolls. And when Krishna sees that we're you know, using our dollies and toys properly, then he'll give us real tools rather than toys, and real baby and things like that. And so that's the real purpose of all these things. And Krishna's here. And we can practice our own, even we see our hearts, we're so angry and selfish. But by using these things, you actually can take that poison out and become qualified to, you know, live in the spiritual. So pretty much that's our humble appreciation for this verse. 1 second here. Robots. Robots confusing me. Down, robot. All right. Go to. Yeah. Nadya Samudra Girayaha Savanaspati Virudaha Palanti Oshadjaya Sarva Kamam Amritu Tashyavai. The rivers, oceans, hills, mountains, forests, creepers, enacting drugs, and every season pay their tax quota, the king, in profusion. So, any comments, questions like that?
So, Prabhu, as I Again, please go ahead and ask questions, make comments, but if you're not, if you could remain muted.
I'd like to, Maharaj, wonderful class, thank you, as always. A couple of small comments. One, you were talking early in the class about Microsoft Word being impersonal and correcting. If you wanted to put the cow, he, it wanted the cow, it. Well, it should have corrected you, but it should have said the cow, she. Good question. And the bull, he. Anyway, just a humorous comment.
Thank you.
It struck a chord with me when you mentioned about having partitions in our day to sort of stop and think and sort of recenter, focus our mind upon Krishna. And I was just thinking in my personal experience how helpful Gayatri is, particularly the noon Gayatri, when the mode of passion appears so strong. Sometimes I'm so busy in my office or busy doing things, and I almost have to force myself at noon or thereabouts to walk out of the office, walk a little grotto, a little place in the forest I go to chant my noon Gayatri. And when I chant the Gayatri, it's like I'm thinking, oh my God, how wonderful it is to sort of recenter and bring my mind back purely to Krishna and meditate upon each one of these mantras, which have such, they're so profound and have such depth and just take you right to the nectar that life is all about and our essence is all about. So anyway, I just thought that the Gayatri, at least for me, is particularly the noon Gayatri. In the morning, it's, you know, kind of mode of goodness is there. I'm chanting my rounds and it's, you know, a good time of the day spiritually. In the evening, as the sun is setting, it's also a real mellow mode of goodness seems to be sort of, it at least feels like the mode of goodness is becoming prominent again. But in midday, the Gayatri is really helpful to stop and focus my mind on Krishna.
Yeah, thank you. I've heard that Prabhupada said he was especially present in his murti, at, you know, the sandhyas like that, and just sitting chanting in front of him like that, you know, had a special potency too, like that. But yeah, it's so nice, you could say, to get out and go, you know, just get out of a change is as good as a rest. So go someplace where there's a more pleasant atmosphere and chant.
I have a comment or a question.
Okay, who is this?
This is another question to ask. It seems like in society in general, and for some points of view, there's difficulty for the common people to make the leaders accountable. And I was wondering if you had any insights about how the rank and file devotees can help to make the leadership of ISKCON accountable. Thank you.
Wow. It's a big question, you know, because somebody, one thing occurs to me right away is, wow, what is ISKCON? You know? For example, I went through like Upadeshamrita, which I try and start with that, you know, for everything. You know? And I was just looking up the citations where Prabhupada talks about ISKCON, you know, this society, this and that. And he really identifies ISKCON in more as like a cultural society than a political society or an administrative society. And that you belong to ISKCON like being a Christian or being a Buddhist or being a Methodist. You know? And so he said that ISKCON is established. So we can engage in these six exchanges. We can talk to each other about the things that are kind of confidential and important to us. Give gifts, share prasadam like that. Yeah. So in that aspect of, you know, of an accountability in some ways doesn't come in, you know, so much. You know, yeah. But simultaneously, yeah, Prabhupada also established another level, another side where somebody can be a life member. And he can say, I'm a member of ISKCON. And yes, Prabhupada established the program. And he may smoke, drink, everything else. But he's a member of ISKCON. Prabhupada established this program. Then somewhere in the middle, I think, is this more level where things are a political system. Somebody pointed out to me, it was actually a little bit shocking to me, and I think it's true, that no place in any one of Prabhupada's books does he ever mention the GBC like that. You know? And so it's like, somebody's, wow, what is it? You know? But it's there in the letters and everything else. Very, you know, of course, very active in Prabhupada's whole thing. So I think that I would say in that perspective then, that I would think the thing is the more we develop Brahminical culture and the more we become brave and honest, then automatically other people will have to, will naturally fall in line and do their work properly. And it can be sometimes, you know, of course, it can be administrators and political leaders who are more advanced devotees than those who are Brahminical. You know, or there can be, you know, dogs, you know, who are more advanced than human beings. You know? So the bhakti aspect is something to consider first. And after you have your devotional relationships somewhat clarified, then you can engage in your political relations. So if the Brahminical aspect of devotees, which formally, in the political sense, would be the sannyasi, the Brahmins, if they're brave and strong, and strength comes from austerities and good intelligence. I even had a personal experience of this. I was involved in one conflict with three GBC people, and it was going around and around and got getting heated. And at, you know, some point I was being threatened with being restricted from traveling. And then, of course, the comment came up that the GBC is the ultimate management body in ISKCON. And I responded, yeah, but the sannyasis are the ultimate spiritual authority. And then the GBC fellow kind of paused and said, calm down. And in the end, it was very nice. We went through it very carefully, pulling our tempers and discussing everything and dealing with difficult points. In the end, it was very nice. And so everybody, you know, got accountable, everything else. So I would say, in some ways, there's so many different answers, but that one thing is that if we individually promote in our own lives Brahminical culture, honesty and courage, and then support that in the broader society, you know, then we can see it spreading like that. And actual systems, like we were saying before, that depends upon the character of the people. Otherwise, no system is going to be effective. That's okay?
Yeah, thank you. Here's a quote from Thoreau on a little bit on courage. We do all stand in the front ranks of battle every moment of our lives. Where there is a brave man, there is the thickest of the fight. There the post of honor.
As I understand, it was actually Gandhi actually read from Thoreau that this one essay on civil disobedience, and there were several people, I forgot who it was, one in England and Gandhi, several people, I think, had read that essay on civil disobedience, and it became the basis of their perspective and their own struggles, you know. So, you know, it's very potent. Actually, they were transcendentalists. Actually, Emerson has a little essay on the Bhagavad Gita.
Maharaj, I had a couple of comments. You know, my wife and I were listening to classes their mother-in-law was giving, and that Srila Prabhupada, she commented to me that, oh, that sounds just like communism. Because, you know, my wife, of course, she is from Lithuania, so that was former communist bloc. And it's interesting that Srila Prabhupada uses the term spiritual communism because, Yeah, it's whatever the communists wanted to do, you know, because originally, you know, they were thinking this is going to, everybody's going to share, no one's going to have any wants, no one will be cheating.
Yeah. So when I was in Russia a couple of years ago, I went two times, and my impression was that there, in many ways there was a real definite step up, not every way, you know, from the unbelievable corruption and you know, fornication and all these things that were going on in the degraded monarchical government. And then, you know, now, of course, it's changed, something else is happening, you know. But that there were, you know, many good aspects like that to it, which would step up.
You know, another interesting thing is, I've been picking up a few things about the Lithuanian language, and it looks like there's a lot of similarities between it and Sanskrit. So I don't know how many other languages like this, but at least in Lithuania, there's no name so much for it. Everything, whether it's an adamant or inanimate object, is either a he or a she. Because you mentioned how, you know, your robot or whatever it is, it says, no, a cow is not a, you know, a he, it's a it. So in other languages, you know, that go farther back, you see everything is having a personality.
Yeah, I think even in Spanish it's the same way, too. Even there's a male and female it. Like, lo y la. Yeah. La cosa, lo, cosa, cosa, cosa. Yeah. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Hi.
Hi, Dhaniwad.
Hare Krishna. Please accept my obeisances. I had a question about Varnashram. We had a seminar recently with Dhaneshwara Prabhu, and it looks like. And devotees talking nowadays a lot about it. And to me personally, maybe I don't understand much, but it looks like it's very unclear, at least for me, you know, how it would happen and where we would have to start. And sometimes it seems to me that maybe we just should worry about our purity and sadhana, and then Krishna maybe gonna will reveal the ways of Varnashram. Could you please somehow answer this question to me?
Well, there were, for example, many times Prabhupada was talking to priests, Catholic priests, and people like that, and he wouldn't talk about religion usually. He would talk about Varnashram. That is religious. That's the beginning. It's ethics and morality, pretty much. You know? So he would always say that, you know, the start of the whole thing was that you have to have a class of good people. And he says everybody knows what a good man is. He doesn't smoke, he doesn't drink, he's not unchaste in his relations, you know, his family, his wife. He doesn't steal. So he's saying it's a universal thing, you know. He says that that's the first, like, you know, proposition of religion is to establish ethical and moral standard, and then have a good people who follow it as an example, like that. And also, he's not a fool. You know, he knows the scriptures, and therefore he can give advice that is true in all circumstances and all situations. Like I was saying, if you purpose before, and then specifically, very practical. Then probably saying the first thing, of course, is not killing animals. And then if you can, the Brahminical culture, you know, has involved in that and has to preach that like that. Then the idea is the Brahmanas, some people, we don't create it. You know, some people have a tendency to be Kshatriyas, some people have a tendency to be Shudras, some Brahmanas, like that. And if those people who, by Vaishnava potency, can develop their qualities, you know, or even a little bit artificially take up the post, then they can then inspire, you know, the Kshatriyas and the Vaishnavas. Also, it's light of the Bhagavad too. I'm familiar with that. It talks about the wind taking the clouds to the right places to deliver the water. So Prabhupada says that's the Brahmanas. They're the wind. They should, by their talking, by their hot air coming out of their lungs, their pins, you know, they should go around and preach and talk. So it's, Sankirtan is the way to try to establish this. and then other people who are action people, you know, they like to talk so much, they like to act. You know? Okay, but then they need someone to tell them this is the strategy, is go ahead, and then they hop right in and get to work and have some fun. Yeah. So that's how I understand Prabhupada's idea. And of course, the way it works is that you have an intelligent class of men. We're always trying to develop that, like his classes. And then, yeah, the opportunities have to be there. But Urmila's comment about no Kshatriyas. But just practically speaking, a temple president, in some ways, a Kshatriya. The not exactly, but you know, so we're doing it, you know, as best we can. We can't challenge the United States of America to a fair fight, you know, someplace, you know, or else. But even a mayor, you know, the mayor of a city in South America, the many times the country the national government is really disorganized. So what it comes down to is the mayor of the county seat is actually the most prominent Kshatriya. And he has his police force, his county police with some little more sophisticated weapons. He has his own hydroelectric plant coming out of the mountains, which he maintains a contract with some Swiss company to keep it going. All the corn, vegetables, everything else are produced within the county, like that. And so you see, you know, one county is, practically speaking, it's there. I mean, you know, the character stuff. So that's what I would say, that we're in a very difficult situation to actually try and establish it. The whole ambience is really contrary, you know, to it. And, but we go on, you know, preaching, communicating, and those people who have an inclination and stuff will naturally listen to our advice, and different principles will enter in more and more. So that's the first thing. You can say that this is the age of Kali. So following four principles, chanting 16 nice rounds, full morning program, RT, kirtan, class, and then as much as we can, you know, engaging in spreading the sound vibration by distribution of books and individual lectures, writing, publishing. In so many ways, everybody's, you know, occasionally even to come part time, mahama. You know, Krishna inspires in our heart to find our position. And I see my you know, observation of the world is changing a lot. I mean, maybe we don't notice what would have happened if we hadn't been, you know, acting like Brahmins and engaging in the Sankirtan Yajna. We may be like in hell past human imagination by now. There was no Hare Krishna movement, you know, going on. So that's what I understand is going on with our Brahminical activities, and like you say, at some point in some place, maybe Poland will be the first Krishna conscious government. When the Pandavas got Draupadi, they didn't just get a, you know, somebody with a good figure and a pretty face. They got a kingdom. Before, they had no kingdom. All the mechanism of government was in the hands of Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra. Mm-hmm. So when they got Draupadi, they got a place to sit down. And they had a treasury, they had a military, they had allies. And it wasn't the biggest kingdom, but it was sufficient, you know, to start actually doing things. So as soon as one country, or maybe even one city or something, one autonomous, pretty autonomous unit becomes Krishna conscious, then we can start, you know, doing things the way we want to do it. And then they think the example will become very prominent to other people. Other citizens will say, hey, they're happy. Why don't we do it this way? The administrators will feel pressure, which is maybe one reason it's not developing, because, you know, we don't want to become too prominent too quick. And it's an obvious principle. The tall, straight trees are the first ones to get cut down. So if things start to become too concentrated and too developed, then automatically we're going to get a lot of, you know, pressure. And if we're not ready for it, then it's going to be disastrous. You know? So maybe Krishna is still like growing the grass everywhere rather than growing the big tall trees.
I have a question, Maharaj.
Who's this?
Janas Priha.
Oh, hello.
Hare Krishna. I have a hypothetical question. If somebody of the caliber of Maharaj Yudhisthira will be put into government in today's system, do you think he could do anything?
Actually, there's one purport where it's describing Maharaj Parikshit and how he was dressed. And Prabhupada says, until there is a king like Maharaj Parikshit with regal dress, weapons, and full authority, it won't be possible to stop the Kali Yuga. But somebody has good advisors, he has good character and everything else, there's no doubt about it. You know, I mean, actually, I was thinking about it, I would try and like take control of one county. My conspiracy theory thing. Not in a bad way, but no. Some a little bit more rural county, and you know, you make your adjustments. Politics means compromising with your big authorities. You know, when to attack and when to run away, you know. So you make your adjustments this way and that way, and make you establish your authority, and maybe make a vegetarian county or, you know, whatever, and teach reincarnation in the schools, for the speak of creationism. And you fight off the different government agencies, you make your strategy. And so yeah, there's no doubt about it. Somebody with somebody Maharaj Yudhisthira would know exactly how to use politics and everything else to make big changes, you know, very quickly.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Maharaj, we have a written question. I can read it to you. You can probably see it in your Skype also. It says, thank you, Prabhu, for your humility. Thank you for a nice lecture. I have a question. This is from Anupama. We think that material energy is an inferior energy of Krishna. How can anything be inferior about Krishna when he is all perfect and complete? Maybe it's his parashakti manifested in different way. Maybe once we realize this, we may find that material energy is the same highest energy transformed in a different way.
That's why I just started reading of. Actually, we're just reading a quote from the Light of the Bhagavad. And Prabhupada says that some people say, you know, they denigrate or badmouth the text number 9, no? Or 22, the Light of the Bhagavad. And Prabhupada says, no, this is also one of Krishna's energies. But in Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada says it's inferior because, you know, in the external energy, you know, everything is temporary, for one thing. It's the very, very thing. Like, in the spiritual world, there's one flower and it's beautiful and it's nice fragrance, but that's eternal, you know, and ever increasing in beauty. In the material world, anything like that is temporary, you know, but from the broader perspective, it's perfect. It's just like the prison. The government supports the prison as much as it supports the fine arts budget, because for a certain kind of its citizens, its beloved citizens are confused and whatever. So the prison is there. It's like a hospital, you know, surgery. You might see cutting people up is inferior to an ordinary life or something, you know. But yeah, at that time, it's not inferior. So I think, yeah, it's a fact. And when we get the proper perspective, there's only one energy in some ways, which is the Lightini Shakti, but then it manifests itself in different ways and different perspectives. You know? So, you know, so we... It is from the perspective of those who are in Maya and have to make relative decisions, of those who are preaching, yeah, then the material energy is inferior, and we encourage people to get out of the material energy and go to the spiritual energy. But from a broader perspective, then, you know, it's nice, it's good. And the prison is as good as the cultural program. But on the other hand, we can't say, no, the prison, you know, honey, what do you want to do? You want to go to the movies or you want to go to prison? Well, I'd rather go to the theater. Yeah. So that's what I understand.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna, who is this?
My name is Maharani Devi Dasi, Dandavat.
Hi.
I was, something you said in class sort of stuck out a little bit. You said, we go to the doctor to hold us together another 25 years. And I was thinking, and we've had a lot of discussion among the devotees here a lot about this lately. I always read that our days are numbered, that we have a certain number of days, so it doesn't matter if we go to the doctor or not, except unless it's like helping our quality of life. Do we have a fixed number of days, or can the doctor help us live 25 more years?
Now, as I understand, you know, everything's under control, everything, but sometimes the control is that you have options. You know? If everything's absolutely controlled, then there's no possibility of creating karma. You know? So in the mode of ignorance, which your heart can be in the mode of ignorance, but your senses and mind can be in the mode of goodness and your ambience. You're Buddhist, you're gentle, you're kind, you're tolerant, you're merciful, but in your heart you're thinking, I will become God. You know, this is the greatest. You become Bill Gates or something like that, you know, okay, Indra. But to become God is the greatest insanity. So, you know, this mode of ignorance, we're completely controlled. If your senses are in the mode of ignorance, you're like a plant. You know, you can see it is absolutely forced to sit there and just take it. You know? And on the other hand, mode of passion, then there are options, but it's hard to take them sometimes because our desires are strong or being pulled, or we can see them, but it's hard to follow them. In the mode of goodness, you're actually given choices. You know? And then you make a decision about what your future is going to be like that. But they're relative, you know. It's, you know, a child has a choice between the Bhagavatam and the coins. You know, it's like the little choices. But yeah, there's some choice there. And how we use that free will, of course, impresses Krishna in terms of, you know, how to give us then, you know, absolute, you know, choices like that. So that's what I would say, that sometimes we can't make any adjustments. For example, one devotee many, many years ago, an astrologer at Berkeley, he was doing the chart for one of the Brahmacharinis. And he told me afterwards, he said that she had like this really intense, you know, influence of Venus after like 4 years or something. It was something else. And it was almost guaranteed, as far as he could say, that she was going to get, you know, pregnant outside of marriage. And he was telling her, even if you know this, it's just going to sneak up on you or something. It's just like, as far as I can see, don't be surprised. If you try your best, it's going to be a hard time to avoid this. It's something you're getting as a result of your previous activities. He said, but then Mars and this, there'll be a strong like desire to have an abortion. But that's optional. Don't do it. Yeah. So that's what I understand. Karma is like that. Sometimes certain things are just fixed, and we have to find out, okay, this is fixed. Yeah. But the other things you see, well, okay, here's where my courage and, you know, and determination come into effect, because I can make a change in this area. Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I understand. You know, sometimes it's fixed, sometimes nature gives us an option to make choices.
Maharaj?
Yeah.
Early on in the talk, this is Doug DeMadova, us. Early in the talk, you mentioned a book by a devotee in Vrindavan, a Sanskrit grammar book.
Yeah,
What's the name of the book?
Yeah, I knew you were going to ask that. No, the copy I had, I left in South America for the devotees to translate. And he published it was Yadudas or something, that's a regular course. And I think he published this big detailed thing on the grammar of the Bhagavad Gita. So it wasn't him, it was one devotee who was like talking about him. I can't remember now, he published it again as a little bit expanded thing. And he also, I think, published a small thing with a couple of Upanishad and that and so on. So I don't have it with me like that. I can't remember. When I go to South America, I'm going to try and pick it up again.
I get a little gem, no pun intended, something to add to these verses. I've heard over the years, Prabhupada mentions that the rain sometimes on the ocean, it produced jewels, you know,
yeah,
read the purports, right? So, you know, and I'm trying to understand how that's possible or whatever, but then I just remembered, as you were speaking, something just tripped this off. I was in Sri Lanka getting a visa many, many years ago to come back into India, and I met this guy who had a synthetic sapphire.
Pearl.
Sapphire. And he was telling me, you know, how difficult it was for somebody in India to tell if it's real or not. And there's different tests. But he told me that there's this colored glass that it looks like colored glass that washes up on the beaches in Sri Lanka. And the beachcombers, these people collect it, and they auction it off by the kg, and people buy this, and they sift through it. And a lot of it is glass, but sometimes they're finding sapphires and different precious gems in the mix.
Wow. Wow, okay. I agree. Even Charles Townes, we got a little bit of contact with him. He was a Nobel laureate. He discovered the laser, I mentioned before. But he was saying that there's just so many things now that we don't understand. You know, science is discovering this and that and this and that. And so that's why you said we need a broader paradigm. And that's why he was interested in the Bhaktivedanta work and Asian philosophy. So, because it is, there's so many things like that. We just can't understand why certain astronomical arrangements, you know, with meteorites falling produces pearls and jewels. But it's 11:45, so I guess I should, you know, get going here. I have to go to my grotto. Yeah, my guys, we're in California. I'm sorry, but we're a little bit ahead of you guys there, you primitive guys out in the islands.
Well, thank you, Maharaj, so much for taking the time to give class like this. We really appreciate it. There's about 30 devotees on today. Really benefiting us very much.
Yeah, for me, it's all really nice community, Vaishnava community.
I'm appreciate Swami Ki Jai.
Thank you so much. One thing a little later, maybe we can get on. I'll try and show you how WebEx works. It's a whole different system, and maybe more control. Maybe you can maybe use that even for developing the system here. Okay, Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.